In recent years, Canada has included its first people's populations in its efforts to expand renewable clean energy projects. Our next guest on Current State has spent the last 2.5 decades working, as his website states, at the intersection of clean energy, sustainable development, environmental action, economic development, and Aboriginal communities. Chris Henderson is an advisor to more than a dozen Indigenous communities across Canada and the author of Aboriginal Power, Clean Energy, and the Future of Canada's First Peoples. He's in town to speak to the Midwest Association of Canadian Studies Conference at MSU. Welcome to Current State, Chris.
Thanks, Mark.
Let's start by clarifying that in the U.S. we tend to use the term Native Americans. In Canada, terms like First Peoples, Indigenous People, and or Aboriginals. In general, though, we're talking about the populations of people who were here before Europeans arrived. Your website claims that Canada's First Peoples are building sustainable prosperity through participation in clean energy projects, and that, you say, follows decades of missed and mismanaged opportunities. In what ways are Canada's Indigenous people tapping into clean energy?
Mark, I think a couple of trends have come together. One, we need more energy as our economies grow. And there's a desire for greener power, power that comes from environmental sources that are renewable. That means you're tapping into wind, solar, biomass, hydro, that uses the land or water. That's the traditional territory of First Peoples. And First Peoples have said, if you're going to be doing that, we'd like to participate. And you know what? That's getting to create a new story, a new future for the participation of Indigenous peoples in our country's future.
What was it like in the past, prior to this effort?
Basically, in the past, governments mostly, and government-owned utilities like electrical companies, did what they wanted. They may put up a hydro dam and flood a big reservoir, or they may put up a wind site without any consideration that that was the traditional territory of the people who lived there before colonialists came. But the laws have changed in our country, and the policies have changed, and people said that doesn't seem fair. And, you know, if the state still controls the land or owns the land, Indigenous people say we're going to develop renewable energy on it, we think we can be partners.
When Americans think about Native Americans, one association that we tend to make is a connection with nature. Would it be safe to assume that the First Peoples of Canada share that connection with nature?
I think your assumptions are right on, Mark. It's a really deep and abiding connection with nature. First Nations in Canada believe they are stewards of the land, stewards of the water, and they want to make sure it's used environmentally the right way.
And does that make clean energy projects like what we're talking about especially important to them? Those kinds of projects resonate with them?
Yeah, it resonates way more than a pipeline or extraction of oil and things like that. So the fits are better, and it creates different advantages for our society. For example, the reduction of greenhouse gases, which cause climate change.
Chris Henderson's our guest. Chris is an advisor to more than a dozen Indigenous communities across Canada and the author of Aboriginal Power, Clean Energy, and the Future of Canada's First Peoples. Are the First Peoples of Canada benefiting not just from having cleaner energy and cleaner living environments, but also economically? Is there an economic dividend here?
Big time. The average clean energy project in Canada, hydro project or wind project, now has about 20 to 25% Indigenous First Peoples ownership. They get some of that as a carried interest for using their land or water, but they also buy into that interest. They actually raise capital to become co-owners of those facilities. So we're talking about billions of dollars of investment. In total, about $145 billion of investment is going into these new generating capacities, and First Peoples own about 25% of that.
And what kinds of power generation are we talking about? What's the most common one?
The most common is hydro. We still have a lot of rivers that can be extracted for hydropower sustainably without big reservoirs or dams. So that's the most common. Wind is the next most common, then solar, and the use of biomass resources, which is wood fiber and from forest product operations.
Is there one in particular that resonates with you? You've visited these many communities. Mm-hmm. Where are you most encouraged?
I'm most encouraged with hydropower, because if you build a hydropower site where the impact ecologically is minimal, and in fact you can even improve the ecology by improving the spawning beds and protecting land, it will last for 80, 100 years. It's not a short-term project, because once you've built it, effectively the infrastructure is there to generate power for decades. And therefore you're earning money and generating power, clean power, in a way that's really legacy-oriented. So I tend to look for hydropower.
Are these initiatives bringing power to areas that previously didn't have it?
Mostly no. Mostly it's pumping into the main, you know, electricity grids where we need it. So go in cities like Toronto and Montreal and places like that.
Is the Canadian government a partner in this movement?
They're not a partner, but they're a supporter. They provide some early stage support to Aboriginal communities to become partners in these projects. But you know what? Most of these projects are commercial. They're business oriented. You got to make it work.
Americans are debating the Keystone Pipeline with the backers touting a likelihood of cheaper energy and more jobs. Opponents argue against the potential risks to the environment. The U.S. House passed a measure yesterday, as it turns out. To what extent might the Keystone Pipeline be an issue not just for Canadians, but for the First Peoples of Canada?
For the First Peoples of Canada, pipelines like Keystone are an issue, but where there are about four or five major pipelines in development in our country, and none of them yet have had strong support. In fact, they usually have strong opposition from First Peoples because they're concerned about the use and damage to the land. I expect that the Indian tribes in the West would probably oppose Keystone as well.
What's your personal background? Are you Aboriginal?
No. My line is that, and I tell this as a joke, which my Aboriginal friends like, I'm the real Indian because I was born in India.
Okay.
And when I tell them to that, one of the guys said to me once, Chris, I'm not disappointed that Christopher Columbus was looking for India. I'm just glad he wasn't looking for the Virgin Islands. And we'd be known as virgins for the rest of our lives, and that's no good. Or he wasn't looking for turkey. So, no, my short line is that I'm the Indian-Canadian, though I'm as Canadian as a hockey puck. I work with the Aboriginal people of our country, and whether they call Indians or others, it doesn't matter. For their purposes, they call their real Aboriginal names, their cultural names, which may be Cree, Ojibwe, Haida, and that's what counts to them. That's their core culture.
And what makes this so interesting to you? How did you get into this?
Funny story, Mark. I mean, a firm from Wall Street about 20, 25 years ago wanted to come to Canada. They were a renewable energy company. At that time, markets weren't open to the grid. You couldn't develop a project entrepreneurially. So I went to the remote communities of Canada, diesel communities in the far north that were mostly Aboriginal, and I got to know them. In the meantime, we needed more power on the grid, and the market opened up, so I started working with them on the grid. What I love about it is that this is good, clean energy that makes our societies greener, that we need to have a sustainable future, impact on climate change. But I'm helping First Nations own a part of their legacy on their traditional territory, legacies that's going to give them income, jobs, social benefits for decades. That's changing the story that we've written with First Peoples in Canada. It's been a poor story for 400 years. I think it's going to be a lot better story in the future.
Chris Henderson is our guest. He's the author of Aboriginal Power, Clean Energy and the Future of Canada's First People. Chris is an advisor to more than a dozen Indigenous communities across Canada. Is your country's education system set up to train people to work in clean energy fields?
Not bad. And in fact, next year I'm launching something that I call a Clean Energy MBA, which is a training program especially for leaders in Aboriginal communities to work on clean energy projects as leaders of the projects, people who actually own and manage them.
Are there programs to foster the training of Canada's First Peoples?
Then? Yeah, there are. I mean, it means certainly. I think you put the, you know, that you've hit the button on this one, Mark. Is that education, both at the secondary and even the primary level, and certainly the post-secondary level, is crucial to building a more resilient future for Indigenous people, Canada, U.S., and global. And our country's getting better at it. We got some distance to go, to be frank.
Talk to us about the reaction to your book.
Here's a really interesting story about it. Aboriginal people aren't necessary readers of books. It's not part of the tradition. The tradition is mostly oral. So I didn't expect them to be big buyers of the book. They've been incredible buyers of it. And what it's done is given them hope because the book tells stories. It tells stories of 80 projects around the country. It tells stories of 300 people, many Aboriginal. And Aboriginal people have said, what this is doing is creating a path for us that's showing that we can use traditional resources on our traditional territory, renewable energy, as a way to have an economic future that changes our story. That's what's really gratified me. When Aboriginal people tell me they read the book and looked at it, man, that does it for me.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask, I guess, on a related note, is literacy a challenge in some of these Aboriginal communities?
Sure.
If books are not a part of the tradition.
Yeah, you're looking at about 20 to 30% of Aboriginal people who are not literate in our country. But you know what? When I go to Aboriginal communities, I work with the business people and the leaders and the chiefs. But I also go to the schools. I often go to the schools and do a thing on clean energy that I call, you know, powerful powers. And you want to bring those people out. You want to bring those kids out and say, this could be part of your future. And if they look at my book, and my book is a book of words, but it's also a book of pictures and images to make sure that they capture imaginations. And if we can do that, and that lets these people maybe think about reading or thinking about education or working in clean energy, well, man, that's where I want to be. Mm.
This week, the U.S. reached a deal with China related to climate change. You say that the deal amplifies the fact that both Canada and the U.S. are driving toward a clean energy future. Could you expand on that?
Well, Mark, you know, I mean, we need all energy. We need fossil fuels. I mean, we drive cars, we use gas in our homes. We're going to need those. But they have impacts. And those impacts particularly are in terms of air pollution, but particularly also on greenhouse gases. A clean energy future by using resources that are there for tree for the taking, wind energy, solar energy, hydropower, it's just smart. We just got to do that smart. In Canada, about 60% of our electricity is hydropower. We're going to 65. I expect that we'll see our electricity be about 80% renewable in another 15 years. The U.S.
Wow.
is on a strong track. The
U.S. 80% in 15 years?
Yeah. The U.S. installed more solar power in the last 12 months than it has in the last 20 years. So what President Obama did with the China deal is not out of the blue. You look at places like Texas and Kansas. I mean, there's huge installations of wind power in those states. The U.S. has great renewable resources. It has great fossil resources. We need both, but let's transition to the cleaner ones and do it really smart for the environment and the economy.
Our guest has been Chris Henderson, an advisor to more than a dozen Indigenous communities across Canada and author of the book, Aboriginal Power, Clean Energy, and the Future of Canada's First People. Chris is in town to speak to the Midwest Association of Canadian Studies conference here at Michigan State. Thanks for joining us, Chris. Good luck.
My pleasure, Mark.